This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you by the Friends of the Magic Word. Those are the ones who give us financial pledges and donations to help keep this podcast going. This week, we want to welcome our newest friend of the Magic Word, Rick Herbert from Elite Magic. Thank you very much, Rick, for your pledge through PayPal. We appreciate your pledge and also encourage others who might have the financial ability to pledge or donate whatever you can. It certainly helps. And if you'll go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there you will see a tab that says Become a Friend of the Magic Word. And by clicking on that, you can learn the ways how you can support us. And also, if you go to patreon.com/themagicwordpodcast or do a search on Patreon, you can then find us and you can find out what kind of cool perks that you can get at different levels of donation. Well, this week we're going to be talking with a young up-and-coming magician who lives in California, and she has been making quite a name for herself. Speaking of Patreon, she has a Patreon page in which she is soliciting funds for some of her projects, and she has appeared on Penn & Teller Fool Us and on other television shows and has really been working a little bit of everything and anywhere in order to try to get the experience she needs so that she can continue on her path as a professional magician. She has been competing in magic contests at magic conventions, which is how I first met her. I was a judge at an IBM convention where she competed, but she has also been doing princess parties, birthday parties, and all kinds of stuff on Penn & Teller Fool Us and other television shows, and has been around for a while and is a name who may not be familiar to you yet. But I'm just saying you should be on the lookout and watch out because this lady is coming up fast and she will certainly make a name for herself in the magic world. This week you're going to learn a little bit about Katrina and her background and her goals for the future. But the interesting thing is, too, she is really working hard in marketing herself, and so she gives some pretty good tips on social media and also some books and some advice that is something normally people who are twice her age still don't use or know about yet. So anyhow, she's got some real pearls and words of wisdom here, which I implore you to pay attention to as you're listening to this episode. So please welcome my guest this week, Katrina Crutch, perhaps better known as Magical Katrina, here on The Magic Word. This week, I've got a guest with me all the way from Los Angeles, California, someone who is well known for doing, she was doing a lot of birthday parties as well as some corporate things. You may have seen her on television, Penn & Teller Fool Us. We've got other things we can talk about. This is going to be just really great. One of the next young women and young people, person, magician, wizard of the future. Please welcome Katrina Crutch. Hey, Katrina, how are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for pronouncing my name right.
Well, you taught me that so many years ago when we first met. You said it was crutch, like a crutch, like someone would use a crutch, right?
Yeah.
Because you spell your name how? K-R-O-E-T-S-C-H?
Oh. Yeah. In a very intimidating German way with lots of unnecessary letters. K-R-O-E-T-C-H.
C-H. Mm-hmm. There's not an S in there.
Nope. But okay. Hey, why not?
Throw one in there.
We could throw one in there.
That had to be one of the most difficult things, I think, whenever you are being introduced. So when you do you go by like Katrina the something, the amazing or something? Or do you tell them, say, crutch?
I go now by Magical Katrina. And how that came about is I was trying to figure out what name to go by for Fool Us because I figured once you're on TV, it's hard to change your name after that, right?
Well, that's true.
And I was sitting with Bizarro and the Shocker, and they were like, why don't you just do what we do and go by one name like Madonna, right? Like Katrina. And I think I chose Magical Katrina because that's what my social media was. Also, it's great for SEO. No one says, oh, Magical Katrina, what does she do? Is she a plumber?
Well, that's true, which is a funny thing. I years ago, I used to go by the name Great Scott. And I had t-shirts made whenever I used to do birthday parties, and I would give t-shirts to the birthday child. And it would say, I heart the magic of Great Scott. Had a magic wand and everything. And I had some of these made in adult sizes also. And my wife was on a bowling team, and I sponsored the bowling team one year. So all these ladies were wearing the shirts. One of them asked my wife if this was a lawn service that was sponsoring. She didn't know I was a magician. So Great Scott.
With the wand?
Well, Great Scott. Great Scott, like Scott's Lawn Service. You know, I mean, True Green. I mean, Scott is a brand. And so she thought perhaps, anyhow, I just thought that was kind of funny. So, and I also got rid of Great Scott a long time ago when I first worked the Magic Castle. Bill Larson, who had said there is another Great Scott out here, as he might think about using another moniker. You can make up something else or use your own name. So I went with Scott Wells. So enough about me. Back to you. So your name then, you changed to Magical Katrina. When you do birthday parties, do you go by Magical Katrina then too as well? Or is that something you just did for?
Well, my website's magicalkatrina.com. My social media is magicalkatrina. My Yelp and a lot of things are magicalkatrina. When I'm at birthday parties, though, or in person or any gig, I feel like it's weird to say, "Hi, guys, I'm Magical Katrina," mm-hmm. right? You know, like if you think about it, like Jen Kramer is like, "I'm Jen."
Mm-hmm.
And I think all of her social media is Jen Kramer Magic or something like that. But you don't introduce yourself as your website name necessarily or your social media name. You introduce yourself as, "Hi, I'm Scott."
Yeah.
"Hi, I'm Katrina." So when I'm at birthday parties, I just say, "Hi, my name's Katrina. I'm so excited to be here today celebrating Jimmy's 8th birthday," or whatever, you know.
Right.
I don't say, "I'm Magical Katrina." It's more just, I think, a business thing for SEO. And it's important, I think, to have your website and all your social media handles and everything all match the same name, so you're easy to find.
Do they on yours? I mean, like with Instagram and Twitter?
The one problem on Instagram is I had to have an underscore at the end of my name because there's And if this person's listening to this podcast, please contact me because I want to buy your Instagram name from you. But there is an account in Germany of someone that goes to Disneyland Paris named Magical Katrina without an underscore. And I've contacted her several times. She hasn't posted in 2 years. I've messaged her on Instagram and be like, "Can I please buy your username from you? You're not even a magician." Like, you haven't been on in years and nothing. So if someone knows Magical Katrina on Instagram without the underscore at the end, because that one's me, please tell her I have money for her.
Why'd you put the underscore at the end as opposed to between the two names?
Because I wanted it to all be the same. So like on my business card, it's at Magical Katrina and for everything, just on my business card. And I don't have the underscore. But if you type in Magical K, and you're anywhere in the world and you don't have mutual friends or anything, I'm the first one that pops up because this other woman has like 200 followers or something and I have like 30,000. And I've tested that. Like, I met a photographer in Houston when I was doing a shoot this weekend in Houston and didn't know me, didn't have any mutual friends. He wanted to follow me. And if you type in Magical K, I immediately come up. So it doesn't really matter where the underscore is. But if it's at the end, then it more matches. Like, you know, I don't have to write 5 different things on my business card, like Twitter, it's this, Instagram is this. If like the majority of it is the same, it's going to pop up right away.
That's right. And that says a lot about you. I mean, obviously it's not Plumber Katrina. It's Magical Katrina. Same thing. Like when I say Scott Wells Magic, it's clear as to what it is. That's true. Going back then to SEO, it's interesting. Do you keep that updated pretty regularly? Do you watch your site and everything? What do you do for your SEO? Which, by the way, for those who don't know, it's search engine optimization. So you're trying to keep your name in the top 10, as close to the top as you possibly can all the time. What do you do and how often do you do it?
Well, I do a lot of things like keyword stuffing, which is when you just look at how do you want people to find you. Think about what your client is searching for in Google. So like maybe Janet booking Jimmy's 8th birthday party is looking for a magician in Los Angeles, or virtual magic show Zoom children's show, right? So if as a magician, how I've gotten better at SEO, other than listening to things like The Magic Word and other podcasts and listening to SEO people talk about it, is I'll just do my own research and I'll look and see what, you know, I'll just Google what I want to be found under and see the people that pop up and what they're doing on their site. And a lot of it is keyword stuffing, but with also really good information. Keyword stuffing is just like something like John does the best magic show for children in Los Angeles. And when you hire John to do a children's magic show in Los Angeles, he, you know, and just saying,
oh, I see.
You know what I mean?
You use those phrases over and over. So,
yeah. So it just comes up a lot. But honestly, I don't really do the majority of my SEO. I'm a big fan of automation. And if you're not so great at something and it would take you millions of hours to do something and you're not an expert and you're making like okay enough money, I think you should automate that and what's it called? Like just have someone else do it for you. So I use two different websites for SEO. I use Upwork.com. Upwork's great. I have an assistant on there. She lists clothing for me that I sell online. She does SEO, and I have another SEO person too that does SEO for me. And I have a lot of SEO people on Fiverr and Upwork, and they, you know, I'll often have them do like every few weeks a blog post or something.
Fiverr's great. By the way, people who are listening to that, that's two with two R's, Fiverr.
And Upwork. Find these assistants that are like $5 or $6 an hour, which is maybe not super nice to be paying people $5 or $6 an hour, but they're in the Philippines and other places, and it goes a long way, you know, there, the exchange
is that
rate.
Kind of like a personal assistant?
Yeah, it's a virtual personal assistant. Honestly, I got this idea from reading the book 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss, which
great
is like
book.
Freaking life-changing.
It changed mine too.
Oh my God, I love Tim
Highly
Ferriss.
Recommend that.
Listen to the Tim Ferriss podcast after you listen to The Magic Word, obviously, because The Magic Word's awesome.
Now, keywords are different from tags also. You might want to explain what tags are. Do you update your tags?
I don't know. Is a tag... Tell me what a tag is.
Well, tags are single words. So that way which is kind of like a keyword, but keywords are kind of phrases. But I think tags, I'm not an SEO guy, but I thought you would be able to clarify this really for me. I'm starting to kind of go into deep weeds here. But I think tags are when you would put something like magician, Los Angeles or something. And that way, if people are searching for magic or magician.
What's the difference then between a keyword and a tag, or is it just where it is? So if you look at the title of my website, I think it's like the little bit of words that come up when it's just someone's looking at my website on Google. I think it's like virtual female magician Los Angeles children's show corporate show, or it's something like that. Like the main things I want to be found under, I have there. I've had people comment on it and be like, your SEO doesn't make any sense, or you shouldn't put female magician because that's sexist. That's like saying female president or female pilot. But I'm like, well, you tell that to all the birthday parties from little girls that I'm booking where the mom says, we're specifically booking you because my daughter wanted a female magician. And I literally had to Google female magician because it's so hard to find them. And then it's like, okay, well, it might be sexist to say female pilot or female president or female magician, but how are these little girl birthday parties and things like that are trying to find the specific thing going to find you if you don't label yourself?
Well, that's true. I guess there are some things in which they're looking for someone, not only a female, but there might be someone of a particular background, religion, who speaks a certain language or something. Let's say I'm looking for a Mexican magician, someone who has
Spanish and
Spanish,
English. Yeah.
Right, exactly. I don't think that is wrong that you would have those kind of designations.
Yeah. I mean, I see it. I 100% agree. I'm like, yeah, it's not great, but I feel like if you have some way that you can sell yourself and make yourself unique, like use it.
Well, currently, of course, women in magic, it's certainly not the anomaly it was in the 50s or way back. And it generally accepted a magician can be either. And I think, though, in the general public's eye, they still are thinking of a male magician and a woman in the assistant role to a degree. I'm talking about general public. Magicians, we have all accepted each other as equals, I think, for quite some time, or maybe in some cases, women better than the male magicians I've seen.
So, oh, yeah. There's a lot of tokenism.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I'm a hard worker, but I certainly wouldn't be where I am if I wasn't a token. If I was just a normal dude with brunette hair or like, you know, you, I think I wouldn't have had nearly as much the opportunities as I've had, you know.
I remember talking with Arianne Blackworth that when she was working in Las Vegas and people were specifically requesting a female magician to do some close up or walk around.
Oh, yeah.
So I know that's the case. So it's not just for birthday parties. Back on birthday parties, just a minute. I wanted to ask about the princess parties. And I you were the first one I'd ever heard use that term. And apparently it's a deal, but I'm not a children's magician. So I don't know that much about it necessarily. What does that mean been doing princess parties.
So there's a lot of companies, way more than there are magicians, I think, in most areas. There's a lot of these companies where people will dress as like Disney princesses or Marvel superheroes, things like that. Usually they don't have the rights to use the costumes or brand, and they're going to kids' parties and they'll do things like face painting, balloon twisting, story time, tea parties, arts and crafts, dance party, bubble. One of my first jobs ever was when I was 18 and I went to clown school and I met this guy who was Spider-Man at children's parties. And I thought that was so cool that I could make, I mean, these companies, what they do is they get actors. They hire actors or, you know, young teens, early 20s. And they're like, hey, you can make $30, $40 an hour acting and wearing a costume and doing a show.
Right.
And those people are like, wow, I'm so excited to do that. And then they go to the parents, you know, and it's the same market as magicians. They're looking for children's birthday entertainment. And they're like, hey, you could have Elsa come to your party and it's $250, $300, you know. And then these middlemen agencies, they take like $250 of that or something, and they don't really pay their performers very much. And I can, it depends on the princess party company, and it really does. Some of them are really fair to their workers and stuff. The one I worked for, I felt like it was like the McDonald's factory of princess companies or whatever, or of just children's birthday parties.
They had several people like you. They would just kind of go down the list and find whoever was available.
Yeah. And then they had that, they would give us costumes that were two sizes too big. We'd all share wigs and costumes.
Wow.
When I was 18, I learned my first magic tricks, which was like Dove Pan, the disappearing rose thingy where you press the thing and it's red and then it's gone. So Dove Pan, rose, a change bag, coloring book. Basically learned like a little 20-minute show. And but they weren't magicians. They were this company, right? They also taught me, like, they didn't actually teach me. They sent me links to like 4 YouTube videos, like how to draw face paint on people's faces. And they taught me how to do like a balloon dog and a giraffe. And they taught me like 4 balloons, 4 face paint, very poorly, the secrets behind magic, but no actual skills of how to perform the magic tricks or do anything or phases or make it interactive. They're just like, here's the secret. There you go. And just like they threw me to the wolves or in the deep end, and they just like hired me out. And these people are paying like $300. And then I show up in this outfit, too big for me. You know, the kids are like, I want Spider-Man riding a car for my balloon. And I'm like, how about a dog? Like, and you know, and I'm having to do these magic shows. And for me, the part I would dread the most when I was a princess was the magic show. Cause you can't really phone that in the same way of like face painting. You can kind of like, you know, if you know how to draw, you can face paint. And with balloons, you know, I would make my own balloons. Like someone's like Pikachu. I'm like, cool, that's a yellow dog with bigger ears and a tinier body, and draw a zigzag on the tail. Like there's ways you can kind of BS those things. And also you're just sitting there while the kids are in line coming up to you. But magic, I mean, you have to hold all these kids' attention for it. It was like, just, I dreaded it the most, and it was terrible. And it was kind of the thing where I just had to like sink or swim, and I had to learn it and figure it out or not. And you know, kids are very honest. They're like, you know what? And the other trick that was in my show that I've never used since is that peanut butter to jelly thing. Anyway, so I had like, maybe it was like a 20, 30 minute magic show, but I would dread it. And so that's how I got into magic. And just over the years, I realized my boss was charging like $300 an hour. And I was like, what? I should do this on my own and work for myself.
Right.
So I bought all my own princess costumes. I learned more about face painting and balloon twisting. And I went to face painting conventions. Like there's one called Fabaic in Orlando that's huge. Just like magic, they have like lectures and workshops. And then at night, you all sit in a big room and you jam. But instead of doing card tricks, you paint on each other.
Oh.
So that's cool. I love going to conventions. Just whenever I get into anything, conventions are the best way to learn about something quickly, because all the people that are the best at something and most passionate about it are there.
Right.
And it's like, I don't know about you, but like I learn it really well when I'm concentrating on something and in like just immersed in it. So anyway, I love going to conventions, but I learned face painting, balloon twisting, got better at those, and I got better at magic. And I realized that magic, because I did acting and stuff, I realized that magic was like theater, and it was just like a vehicle for storytelling and acting and comedy and all the things that I loved, I could combine with magic, and like be my own director and be do the things that I wanted to do. And I just kind of do improv, and all the things that I loved, I could combine with magic and create art that I really liked. And I just kind of fell in love with magic. And then I went to the Magic Castle for the first time, like probably like 5-6 years ago, which was well into me being a professional princess. That was like 2 or 3 years into my career. But I honestly, until then, kind of still thought of, I wouldn't have called myself a magician. And I even dated a magician in San Francisco. And I thought, I was like, I'm a princess. I'm not a magician. Even though I did a 45-minute magic show at that point, I didn't consider myself a magician. And all that I thought of magic was like things like Arrested Development.
Oh,
you know,
show.
And I just thought it was like cheesy. And honestly, I thought my magic was okay for kids' magic, but it was cheesy. It was still like, I didn't really respect it in the way that I do now. And I think that's because the people that taught it to me didn't. And then I always kind of saw it as a gig. And then I went to the Magic Castle and I saw like Carissa Hendricks and Zabrecki, and I started watching Fool Us and seeing like Piff and David Kovac. And if you couldn't tell, I pretty much love magicians that have theater and characters and things.
Yes.
That's pretty much my favorites. and I just was mesmerized, and I just started going to the castle like 4 nights a week. I practically lived there, and it made me fall in love with magic. And I just was like, oh my god, like this is art. This isn't a gig or cheesy or what it makes it seem like it is on Arrested Development. I was like, this is amazing. And I just fell in love with it and haven't wanted to do anything ever since.
Wow. Well, going back just a second, I have a question about the princess parties that you were doing and the event planner that was planning all that. Did you have actually an act that they told you to do? In other words, they said, okay, here are the tricks and here's what you do. Or did they just say, you can do anything that you want with this character? And they gave you the wig and the outfit and everything. And so, in other words, were you responsible for learning the act, or did they give you the act?
Neither. They gave me the tricks. Like, imagine someone bought Dove Pan. They had 20 of these. They gave them to every girl.
Gotcha.
Right, that they got. They never hired a magician. They teach these princesses these things. So they gave me Dove Pan, the peanut butter jelly thing, change bag, the disappearing rose, and coloring book.
Okay.
And we all met one afternoon for 2 hours, and they showed us the handling of coloring book and the secret. They're like, here's the secret. Have kids throw in magic.
Right.
Done. That's it. Nothing. No phases. No, here it's colored, here it's not colored. Here's how you can get the kids to participate. Nothing. No script, really. Literally just showed us the secret.
Right.
And gave us the prop. And they're like, there's your magic show. So it was kind of yes and no, because yes, they bought the thing. But then when I left that company, I had to buy my own things and work on my own things. And then also, as I got more and more into magic, I added on to the things they gave me. Like, I made it my own.
Okay.
And technically, I was an independent contractor, but it was more like an employee, because they were just giving you the things and telling you to do the things. So yes and no.
Okay. That answers the question.
A little of both. And then as I got older and more into magic, I expanded on it and I added more to the show. And now, of course, I'm not really doing any of that stuff.
I know there are problems if these event planners or whomever.
Not event planners. It's like a princess party company. Like, if you look it up, there's probably Cinderella Company, Houston, or Ever Laughter. There's a lot of those.
But if they don't have the rights for that, they can get in a lot of trouble, because I know of a guy who was using, I think he was using either some Disney characters or was Barney the dinosaur or something, and he got fined or sued, I guess, for a lot of money. And of course, a cease and desist. And so he's doing okay now, but for a while he had a real problem. And so do these places that you have worked for have the license or not, or some do, some don't?
I'm not sure. Some do and some don't. They would have things on their website like Snow Princess, instead of Elsa. But that's
to be a Lisa or something.
Partly why I got out of it is, one, I didn't want the legal things, but also, two, I wanted to be like empowering to little girls and boys and be myself and not be a princess.
Right. Okay. Well, kind of going on from that, and again, being at the Magic Castle, and I understand you just live like 2 blocks away, so you probably hang out there a lot.
Oh, I was a castle rat. Yeah, I loved it though. I loved the castle, and Mark Wilson was my first teacher, and him and Nani were amazing. Mm-hmm. And I just love that place so much.
Did you take, when you say the teacher, were they a mentor or did you take that class that they were teaching?
Oh, I did not teach anything there. I took all the classes. Okay. Some of them even like more than once, because like the performance class, one is taught by Kayla Drescher and one's taught by, I think it's Alfonso. And so they teach totally different things, mm-hmm. even though it's the level 4 class.
Yeah.
They have, the different teachers have different versions of that class. So I took multiple classes more than once because I live 2 blocks away. And
sure.
It's like, of course, like I kind of want to move to Vegas just for 6 months to take all the McBride classes. Like, and I also, for me, I know that I'm a social learner and a hands-on learner. Like mm-hmm. I've tried to read it. I can't read Tarbell. Like, that's not how I learn. I need to like do the thing in my hands and like mm-hmm. see it happening in my hands. And so anyway, I love the castle.
Have you taken any of Jeff's classes? Have you been to the mystery school?
I was so sad because no, I haven't. And I had like a scholarship before COVID, a partial scholarship. And I was going to take it in April, like his master class.
Yeah.
And I was so excited because like I love like – I just love everything Jeff McBride does, but yeah. I loved his card manipulation deep, like what was Art of Card Manipulation or something. You know, mm-hmm. with the oversized tarot cards, and
yes.
he looks very Peter Pan-like and
yeah.
younger. I just seen that like 500 times. I love that. So I was so, it was such an honor to like, it would have been so cool to learn from him. I've met him a few times and he's really generous with his knowledge. And like, I've been at diners with him where he's like helping me with, you know, back palming and
right.
just in Denny's. He's very generous with his knowledge, but it would have been really freaking cool to take a class from him.
Yeah, he's the one who's always said, if you're going to be a magician, you're a magician 24/7. So if someone asks you in Denny's or you have an opportunity to show somebody, well, you should share magic.
I didn't even ask. Like, he offered to help me. Like, I think I was just like, I've seen your DVD like so many times that I'm just a huge fan. And he like offered to help me and I was like, oh my gosh. he's really, really nice.
Have you ever done any street magic? I mean, just like some busking where you're just kind of out there with the hat.
I've done some juggling busking that we did not make any money.
Okay.
I would love to get into that. I've been meaning to read more Gazzo things and learn yeah. more about busking because I have a very gypsy lifestyle. I love traveling and I think it'd be cool to go anywhere and make money.
You do. And that's why I was kind of getting to that, because your path reminds me a lot of Romani. Do you know Romani?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. I brought her book on this trip. I was going to start reading it.
Yeah. Spun into Gold, I think mm-hmm. it is. She was on an episode some time ago, and I've read the book as well. And it sounds kind of like the things you're doing on your path, you know, are some similar things that she has done and where she has ended up. And her passion for magic is a lot like what yours is. So I just
came from theater and acting.
I could see
yeah.
that. Sure. Exactly. You were talking about conventions then as well. And I want to talk about Penn & Teller, because you were on Penn & Teller Fool Us, but you had met Penn before that. And that's back at a convention. And I think that was when I had first started, when we first met, I believe that was at the Genie convention a few years ago. Was that 2018, maybe?
Oh, man, 3 years ago. Yeah.
Was it? Yeah.
Two and a half years ago. Yeah.
yeah. it was, a while back. And you had participated in a trick and helped Penn on stage. And it impressed him enough that he committed probably about a half hour of his Penn Sunday School podcast in talking about you.
Yeah, that was a huge honor. That was very kind of him.
And did you hear other people, or rather I should say, aside from within the magic community, was that anything that resonated outside where you got booked to do other shows? I just don't know whether that translates over to the public or not.
The podcast, no. I think a lot of magicians listen to that. I'm not sure if other people do or don't. Hmm. I didn't get booked from that, but I did email him after, because he gave me his email at Genie, and I said, thank you so much. I'm so honored that you said those things about me. Like, wow, could mm-hmm. I use, because I think at one point in the podcast, he said I was like the next Lenny Bruce of magic. And I mm-hmm. was like, oh my God, that's an honor. I can't use that to sell my kids shows.
No.
but I was like, can I, you know, take some quotes from you that you said? Can I use right. that, you know, on my website or something? And he said, I'll do you one better. I'll just write something right now for you. And I was like, oh, okay, like, you know, I just liked that you said I'm funny and I'm professional. Like, can I just use that quote? He wrote me back an email and he was like, use this as a quote. And it's, Katrina is a pro. I've worked on stage with her improvising magic in an impossible situation and we killed it. She crushed it. I'll go into showbiz battle with her by my side any day. Wow. I feel like that's an even better quote because I'm like, Teller's by his side. Like, there's no freaking way I'm that good. Shut up. Like, but that's very nice of him to say.
That is nice. And that would translate also to children's parties as far
and
as.
Not Lenny Bruce.
But not Lenny Bruce. Yeah, that is kind of funny, though.
So I have that like front page of my website. I'm sure that's helped me a lot.
Yeah, I would think so, because they do have star power and they're well known in the public, their television show in the U.S. being popular and started over in the U.K. But anyhow, and from that, it was interesting because you knew him. I want you to tell that story you shared with me at lunch about how that you contacted, said, hey, I've got a friend, and he said, I can't really let you, I can't tell you, don't tell me if you're who's coming or who's your friend coming. Or
yeah, because they don't want to like... have it affect the show or him and tell his decision.
Tell that story.
So when I got on Fool Us, Penn had no idea. I was talking to the producers because I had auditioned at the SAM Magic Convention.
Oh, that's right. We had that SAM convention. And you and a lot of people had done that. That was in Las Vegas. That was the in 2020, I think it was. January 20, I believe it was. Yeah.
Yeah, January 20. And we filmed that March. filmed 2.5 months later.
Okay. Wow. Just that quick. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So anyhow, they had chosen you among the candidates who had tried out there at the SAM convention.
Yeah. That's how I met them. I didn't have anything fooling at the time or remotely fooling, but my friend who was helping run the competition, Vinny, he was like, you should do it. Like, I think you could do it. You're entertaining. I know that Penn likes you. And I was like, but I don't have anything fooling. Like, I only have like Triumph and Chicago Opener and they're not even pushed through or they're just a slop shuffle. Like, I don't even have anything good. But like the scripts are unique. I'm very proud of my scripts for both of those. They're funny and I use the cards as like metaphors for stories.
Do you spend a lot of time in scripting and writing things?
Yeah, but I'm more of like the Second City, like Viola Spolin, like improv to make comedy kind of thing. Like I have a hard time writing a joke from scratch. But if I say something that's funny at a gig, mm-hmm. I'll write it down later. Like, I'll rewatch a video and I'll write it down. Or just, I think in walk around and stuff, I'll say something. And then if I notice it gets a laugh, I'll put it in a folder like, okay, you do that next time and see if that gets a laugh. And I just kind of slowly work on things as I'm doing them. And if there's a joke where I'm like, I think there's definitely a joke in there, but the timing or a word is off, then I'll write it and like doctor it. But I'm not good at creating just sitting down and creating material. Like, I need to have something to work from.
To inspire you, basically, you mean?
Yeah, but I think that's one of my things I'm good at is comedy, because I did stand up and I'm not great at it, but I would do it alone from doing magic. And then I also have done improv since I was like 12. Like, I was on the improv team in high school, which you had to audition for. I mean, it was high school, and then I did all the classes in LA and I did Bay Area theater sports in San Francisco. I did love improv and clowning and all that. So I use that to be funny. And I think that's why I really love walk around magic is you can try new things and then you go to the next group and you just start all over and you can try new things and make jokes I just love walk around magic. That's my favorite thing to do. I feel most comfortable doing it. But anyway, what was I saying? Oh yeah. So I'm proud of my jokes and my scripts. I think I'm not a great magic inventor. I know I have the experience of a 2-month-year-old baby doing magic practically. Cause look at you, you've probably been doing it like 30 years, right?
Well, thank you.
Or more. I don't know.
Closer to 50.
I don't want to assume age.
Yeah.
I don't want to say like, you've been doing this 500 years.
Yeah, that's right. I'm a wizard, wizened old man.
Yeah. So anyway, I know that I'm not like the best at the magic part, but I think that I'm good at performing and improvising and being comfortable speaking and I'm hopefully funny.
Yeah.
So that's where I think I shine. And the producers saw me do Triumph and they were like, well, we do not want card tricks on our show. We have too many cards. Like, if it's a card trick, and this isn't their words, but I've heard that if it's a card trick, it has to be something that's like you invented it. You're the best in the world at it. Like, you have to be like, they had Gazzo do cups and balls. Like, you have to be like the authority in that thing for them to showcase you. So they're like, we're really trying to not have cards.
Yeah, like more than 30% of the stuff that they have on Penn and Teller have been cards. And so it's the easy go-to thing. And so they're trying to have something that is different. So that's interesting that they had you do that.
Yeah. And then also, and I recently filmed Masters of Illusion. And when they had me on the show, they said that they sent an email that was like, anything that's not ropes, cards, coins, or silks.
Okay.
So it's like, oh, okay, cool. So the opposite of like the Magic Castle audition. Cool.
Right.
Because I guess those things are, you know, overdone and they're classics, but, you know, they don't want to have repetitive things. So
so they finally booked you then on the show.
Yeah. So I have like a video in my friend's bathroom of me explaining the tricks. I came up with this idea. I'd been doing Princess and Frog Out of This World for years. And it was all the cards are frogs on one side. And then you flip them over and half are princesses or princes and half are frogs. And I would do this at children's parties when I was a princess. And I made this and I designed the cards and stuff. Where I'd be like, oh, well, you know, as a princess, you should know, you know, which frogs to kiss and which ones to not kiss. And then at the end, the little girls would always, you know, it's out of this world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I had that and I thought, well, how could I do that for like modern dating? And then I thought, okay, well, maybe just it could be dating like Tinder, like swipe right, swipe right. left. And then I thought it'd be funny to do like, you know, which of these guys is going to murder me and which of these guys won't murder me, which is a fun game women get to play on online dating all the time. And I pitched that to the Fool Us producers and they were like, well, that's too dark.
Okay. That's funny.
So then it had evolved into what it was. And I remember explaining to them in a video what it was going to be because I hadn't even made the cards yet, like mid-February. I was like, this is what it's going to be because I sent them – they asked me to send them videos of everything I did that wasn't cards. And I sent them like 10 videos and they were like, no, no, send us more stuff though. You're funny. We want you. We just don't know what we want you to do yet.
Right.
And so I just kind of dropped everything and sent them all these videos and was spending days filming things and trying to come up with things. And I was explaining this to them, but I hadn't made the cards yet. And they were like, yeah, we think that's the one. Okay, go make the props for it.
Okay. And you had how much time?
I think I put it together in like a month and a half. I had a month and a half between the idea and filming. But what I did, as I said, I don't think I'm the best at magic, but I think I'm very hardworking and I will just make something my focus. Mm-hmm. And so for that month and a half, that's all I did. And I went to Blackpool and I was in Blackpool on the train.
Yeah.
Meeting magicians. Oh, can I show you this? And every time I met a new person, can I show you this? Because I just wanted to get reps. Because I was telling you, I suck at writing stuff. But I'm good at writing stuff when I'm working on it and learning from performing. And, oh, that was funny. Let me write that down.
Sure.
Or, oh, they said a joke. Let me write it down. Or
did you get that feedback?
So I just got as many runs as I could. And every single new person I met, I got runs and runs and runs and runs. And when I was in Vegas, even the week before filming Fool Us, I was talking to my friend, the Shocker, Greg Dow. Do you know him? He's really, really amazing and always very supportive of me. And he was like, we got to get you doing as many runs as you can. And he called other friends and Murray Sawchuk let me do a bunch of runs in his show. So I was at the Tropicana like that whole week just doing over and over and over again runs of my set in front of audiences so I could get it perfect so it could be like pristine even though I had a short amount of time. And basically I just dropped everything and did that routine for a month and a half and nothing else. And it really taught me that I'm like, oh man, I could do so many more things if I just focused. Like I didn't realize I could make something like that if I just did it every day for multiple hours a day. But it's crazy to think that it was a month and unfortunately, it was a month. It was some of the best work I think I've done.
And how old were you at the time?
It's like 2 years ago. So 24.
Okay.
So I guess I'd been doing magic for like 6 or 7 years then.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Well, I think like the more I work at magic, the more I realize it's like you get out of it what you put into it. And so.
Good advice.
I think I'm a harder worker as I get older, but I definitely like. When I was younger, I would just go to parties and be like, well, I know the secret. Let me try this out. Because that's how they taught me to do magic. So,
what? Going back just real briefly, and then we'll move on about Penn, whenever that you were emailing him back and forth. Yes.
So he's really great. Every now and then he'll email me. He's very nice and very supportive and wonderful and a mentor of mine. He actually sponsored my castle audition. I haven't done it yet, but I'm going to do it maybe this year or something. Anyway, so Penn... I was emailing him like in February, and I was like, hey, Ben, if I have a friend that's going to do Fool Us who's coming out to Vegas, can I tell you that they're coming out to Vegas because my friend is doing the show? And Penn was like, no, you can't tell me. I can't know about it. You'd be disqualified if you told me. I'm not allowed to know who's going to be on the show. And he told me sometimes he has people stay at his house and he doesn't even know that they're going to be on the show because they don't tell
him. That's funny.
He seems pretty sharp. I don't know. But that's a funny story if it's true. He's right. So I was like, so he was like, so don't tell me who your friend is because they won't, you know, they can't know. There's no, it's very fair. They're very fair on that show. You know, it's not like you can just get on because you know someone. And I think a lot of people thought I got on because I knew him or something, but he wasn't even allowed to know that I was going to be on the show.
So he would just surprise anybody else, I guess, in the audience.
Totally. Yeah. And so I was like, okay, I won't tell you my friend's name.
And unfortunately, you ended up not fooling them, I guess, on that.
Mm.
But still, you probably were able to get a lot of street cred from that and get booked. I assume now, as I said, not necessarily being on this podcast, but being on a national network show, you probably did get a lot more exposure, which was good for booking additional shows.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. It's amazing.
And you've done a lot of virtual shows, and I wanted to talk to you just a little bit about that. As you've developed the virtual show, do you continue to evolve, or do you feel like you have your background, your lighting, your microphone, everything kind of as you want it? I mean, this is something I know is important when you're doing virtual shows now and far into the future. I believe we'll be doing virtual shows. So as people are listening to this in 2030, this is being done, I'm sure, then as it is now in 2021.
I'm constantly evolving at tech-wise, less than my scripts and things, but I'm constantly evolving my virtual show. For like a year, I was just using my MacBook, and I didn't even use OBS or anything. And that's, I was booked to do a Penguin lecture on virtual shows when I still didn't even know OBS.
Okay.
But I learned OBS because there was this one little trick I wanted to do in my Virtual Magic Castle show that was like a 4-minute bit, but it fit perfectly with my character. And it was, and I needed to learn OBS to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed to like, in order to have OBS work, I needed a better graphics card. So I bought like a $4,000 laptop so that I could do this 4-minute trick that I don't even do in my kids' show that I just did in my Magic Castle show.
Yeah.
Because that, I mean, I'm sure I'm not the first magician.
That's true.
To spend $4,000 on 4 minutes of magic you do once or twice, because that's just, we're nerds.
That's what we do.
That's what we do. But, and I mean, it's great. It's a nice laptop. I'm sure I could resell it. Now it's just what I use. And, you know, I use OBS. I learned OBS. I bought a Stream Deck in like February this year. After a year of doing shows, I finally upgraded more of my technology.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, I was doing okay. I had like a wireless mouse, and I had a dedicated like webcam that was a Logitech I'd spent like $150 on. But I mean, I'm just constantly always evolving my show.
Sure.
And then same with like bits and jokes and things. Like the kids write them, you know. Like I think my show was pretty good in October, but I recently got a bit in like January or February where I was saying like, look, my hands are empty. And then I would put this devil's hank in my mouth to show that my hands are empty.
Yeah.
And then I'd put it in my hands and I'd say, oh, my mouth's empty. And I'd go, stick my tongue out. For those of you who can't visually see what I'm doing, because this is a podcast. And that would make the kids laugh. And then I had one little boy go, but is it in your nose? And I was like, oh, let me look. And I went, and I like opened my nostrils really big into the virtual screen. And that gets a laugh from the kids.
Yeah.
And that, I didn't write that. That 5-year-old boy wrote that. And so I was like, oh, man, this is gold. I'm adding that to the show from now on.
Yeah.
And now I have a whole thing where I'm like, there's no chocolate in my nose. And then I'm like, check your noses. And then I'm like, check your friends' noses. And it's so cute. I'll see like, you know, a dad and his daughter like checking in each other's noses.
That's funny.
You know, and then I'll do crowd work. I'm like, looks like Joe doesn't have anything in his nose, but oh, Sally, no, we're good. Okay, now that we know there's no chocolate in our hands, noses, mouths, now we're going to make some appear.
So you do have two different monitors. So you're watching one monitor of yourself and the other with all the people in the audience.
I switch back and forth between gallery and speaker view depending on the tricks. And I
on,
have
on the single
reasons
monitor
for that. Yeah, just on one monitor.
Why
on
is
my
that?
Laptop. Well, for certain tricks, I don't need to see how I look, right? Like if I'm sure. doing a French drop, I'll literally look and I'll be like, am I showing windows before I do this? No,
yeah.
cool.
Yeah. Okay.
Like,
yeah.
Or if I'm back palming something, I have a part in my show where I back palm something and I'll switch it from gallery to speaker and I'll go, that envelope's been here the whole time. And I'll gesture with my hands like yeah. And I haven't really revealed that I'm going to grab the envelope yet. So I'll just double check. Okay, my back palm's not showing. If I see a little sliver of something in the screen, because no, this isn't guilty. No one's looking at my hand yet, right?
Right? Right.
So I'll literally look in the view and I'll be like, oh, that looks good. And if it doesn't, I'll like go fix it while I'm still talking. I haven't touched that envelope. Oh, it looks good. Now let me grab the envelope and I'll pause. I'll do like a big pause before I get to the envelope where it's like there's clearly nothing in my hand because I have this really awesome back
palm. And all the focus is on your hand.
And now all the focus is on my hand. But I just, and that's totally cheating. And that's something you could never do in an actual show, like double check your thing using your, you have a mirror in front of you practically. It's
basically,
amazing.
Yeah.
But there's no burning on your hand at that point. You're just gesturing around. Mm-hmm. So no one's looking at your hands. You're just talking. It's not till you go to grab it. So anyway, I love little things like, so there's reasons, and I know the certain parts in my show where I like to see myself and I like to see the audience. And then a lot of times I'll give parents the recording afterwards. So when I know there's really funny moments, like the nose moment
yeah.
where I have them call me out, where I eat the chocolate and I say, ta-da, and the kids all go, you ate it. And I go, no, I didn't eat it. And they're like, you ate it. And I'm like, no, I didn't. So I always know to go back to gallery for that. I know the
right.
parts of my show where the kids are the funniest and most intense. And so
you
I
act
always
as
go to
your
gallery.
Own tech person going back and forth.
Yeah. And you can record in Zoom where it'll do gallery and side by side at the same time. But I'm kind of, I feel like editing this video for the parent as I'm in the show.
Sure.
And it's really easy for me at this point to just switch back and forth gallery speaker. And I know what points in my show are the best moments for my view versus their view. And so I'd rather give them this one kind of semi-edited thing of all the best parts. Then give them two different
videos.
What
is one of your biggest tips that you were giving in your Penguin lecture talking about virtual shows?
Ooh, that's a good question. Ways that you can utilize all the different levels of a platform to make it more interactive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like not just using a volunteer and having them next to you, but I like to do this thing and I'm sure I'm not the first person to ever do it, but I might be the first person to name it this. I call it controlled chaos, where you're like, on the count of three, everyone unmute yourselves and shout your favorite magical word. And I've seen a lot of magicians start to do this, but I was doing a couple public magic shows, you know, March, April, May, and I think I was one of the first people to see do this. I'm sure now every day is everyone's like unmute yourselves and everyone shouts something at once.
Yeah, yeah.
But I like things like that, the controlled chaos, or I'll say everyone write in the chat something, or just ways that you can utilize different things in the platform to make it more interactive instead of just using a volunteer. Like you can really get the kids as a crowd involved and hear
right.
them and have them make sound. And I see a lot of magic shows where people have the people on mute the whole time. And I like being able to hear the kids and have
sure.
it be like a live experience. One of my other favorite things, I just want to say my favorite piece of crowd work probably in anything I'll ever do in my life is I do the trick I did on Penn and Teller for my kids' show, but the kids help me pick out a pet. And so how I get into that is I'm like, oh, I've been spending a lot of time at home. It's lonely. I was going to get a pet. Raise your hand if you have a pet. And I'll have all the kids like raise their hand if they have a pet. And then I say, if you have a pet, go grab your pet and bring them to the screen. Let's do a pet show and tell. I want to see your pets. And it is a true fact that one of my life goals is to meet every single dog, like
okay.
before any of this happens. So I just love it. And I'll spotlight the people and I'll be like, who's this little guy? Oh, this is, what kind of dog are they?
Or yeah.
People have weird animals, like they'll have a hamster or a gecko. And I just, and that's also how I pick out a volunteer, is if they're brave enough to be showing their pet, they're kind of volunteering themselves
to
participate.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's one, it's fun because no one says, oh, this is my dog, but he sucks. Like everyone loves their pets and is excited to show them off. And it's a great like group thing because I'll look on the screen and there's like 30 dogs on the screen or something. And so everyone's participating, even if they're not that person that spotlit. I try to spotlit a couple of them
mm-hmm.
and then I'll settle on one and I'll be like, you know, you seem to have really good taste in pets. Would you help me pick out a pet? But I just love that. And I'm sad because I don't, I mean, I hope virtual shows will be around forever and I'll always be able to do that. And I think corporate wise, they will be. But There's no way I could do that in person. You can't go to the Magic Castle and be like, hey, everyone, show me your dogs.
That's true. Well, do you change your show, virtual show, from time to time? You said that the biggest thing that you work on, I guess, is just your scripting and everything. But I was wondering if you also change the actual tricks within your virtual show.
Yeah. I mean, I try to learn one new trick a week. Like I go on Penguin and I look at all the trailers and I'm like, oh, what, that looks amazing.
Okay.
You know? And so if I see something that I'm like, oh, that looks, I want to do that. I'll add it to my show. I try to learn one new trick a week. I don't always use them and then put them in my show, but I think it's good to know what's out there.
Yeah, I agree. So what's your long-term goal aside from meeting every pet in the world? For the future.
You know, I don't know if I'm ever going to... My favorite thing about that is it's about the journey, not the destination. Because, you know, they keep making more dogs. I mean, I always... You know what's funny is when I first met Lisa Mena, she said that. She was like, what are your life goals? That was like the first thing she asked me. It was so disarming. That
sounds just
And a
like,
powerful yeah. question. Yeah, yeah. I love her, by the way.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know, like to... buy a house. But no, she was like, no, what are your goals? And I jokingly say, like, I don't know, you know, to have an empire, perfume line, you know.
Yeah.
Be like David Copperfield in Vegas. I feel like just shoot for the moon and you'll land in the stars, right? But I think I would like to, I guess, have an empire. Why not?
Yeah, why not?
You know, why not? I mean, let's aim for being David Copperfield. Maybe I'll end up not that, but something else. And that's good too.
Being Magical Katrina.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, as we close then, what is your magical word? What is your, since you do listen, what is your philosophy?
My philosophy?
Yeah, philosophy of life. What do you live by?
My philosophy of life.
And you're a young person, and that is different now than when you listen to your future self, I'm sure. But what is it for today?
I love that. I asked yesterday, I asked this girl graduating high school, I said, if you could tell your future self anything, what would you tell them? I can't remember what she said, but I think that's a good question. My philosophy of life is, you know, to get out of your comfort zone and do things that scare you and are intimidating and that you don't think that you can do, because that's how you grow. Like you never grow in your comfort zone.
That's true.
And so I think that's huge, especially in magic. Like I compete in competitions which terrify the crap out of me, just so I can do something that makes me uncomfortable and pushes me to make something, anything. I have a deadline. Like I always
actually,
give myself
that is
deadlines.
Where I think we first met, when you were competing and I was a judge, actually, and you were
at IBM.
At IBM, that's right.
Yeah, and so I just always do things that push me. That I'm like, oh, I'm not ready for this. I don't have this. Like I auditioned for Penn and Teller, and I talked to, you know, our friend that we were talking about, and I was like, I don't think I should do this. I have Triumph. Like this is. This isn't fooling. I'm not good enough for this. I'm not good enough for TV. And my friend was like, well, just do it. Like you can only grow from doing something, and you're funny and maybe they'll like you. And I'm so glad I did that. I was so, so afraid to get up on that stage and do Triumph for a room full of magicians. And I even got to the part with the reveal.
Yes.
And the whole time, and it was actually, it was funny because I think Nick DeFat's show had been the night before. And I noticed that in his show, he did a lot of breaking the fourth wall and jokes to magicians that probably aren't normally in his script.
Yes.
And so I didn't write this ahead of time, but I just say stuff that comes out of my mouth sometimes when I'm on stage. But it got to the moment of the reveal and I'm like, every single card except for, and then I said, guys, act like you've never seen Triumph before. And that got a huge laugh at sure. SAM because it was all magicians that were just like,
right.
Like, because they knew it's like, you can't do Triumph to a room full of magicians and not realize how we're, like, everyone knows what you're doing. And that got a big laugh. And I don't know why I brought that up. Anyway, I was nervous to do that and it turned out good. So all the times that I've, and with Penn at Genie, that was terrifying. There was a room of like 500 people that didn't want to do that thing. And I got up and I did it. So every time I do something out of my comfort zone or that's a little scary or edgy or weird or, you know, I'm just nervous about it, it usually turns out pretty good. So get out of your comfort zone, people.
That's good advice. Very good. Katrina, thanks very much. I appreciate you being my guest.
Yay. Thank you for having me.
And I appreciate everybody tuning in and listening to this as well. So until next week, that was the amazing, magical Katrina.
Thanks. You could say amazing too. Thanks, Scott.
This is Scotty out. Wow. Thank you very much, Katrina. It was a very delightful conversation there we had, and a lot of good advice as well. And again, as I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, I think a lot of people should pay attention to a lot of the things you had to say, because there was some great advice in there as far as marketing, SEO, and working with your website, and some books like the 4-Hour Workweek and other things like that. And so I would suggest, if you will, please go to our website at themagicwordpodcast.com. And on this week's episode, number 620, you will see a place where you can actually click on if you want to purchase or get more information about The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. That is available through Amazon.com. And speaking of which, I want to remind you again, if you scroll to the bottom of any of the pages on the Magic Word Podcast, you will see a graphic down there of saying we are an affiliate of Amazon. So whenever you purchase anything from Amazon, if you will click on that first, it will take you to your personal page where you can order something, and through your purchases, Amazon, through its affiliate program, will give something back to the Magic Word Podcast. So thank you guys very much for remembering to give us a little love and give us a little click to get to Amazon.com to purchase your next thing, whatever that might be, large or small. So again, I want to thank Magical Katrina for being my guest here this week, and I want to thank you, the listener, for tuning in and listening. We have more great episodes coming up in future weeks, and also, as we're starting to get into the convention season, I'll be posting daily updates from various conventions for the balance of the year, so be sure to come back and listen to those updates. And if you subscribe to our pod letter, and all you need to do is go to themagicwordpodcast.com and click on the appropriate link, and you could get the weekly pod letter. It will tell you whenever we have these things live and what's happening and who is on from week to week, and suggestions from the archives as well. Well, anyhow, one last thing, and then I'm going to let you go, and that is make sure that you subscribe to our YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/Texas Magician. So, enough of all that. Let's close it out. So, until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to get out of your comfort zone, because when you push yourself beyond your boundaries, there's no telling how high you can fly. This is Scotty out.